Why? Well, partially because the one thing that he had promised most fervently to take care of was the COVID pandemic. And guess what? It's showing the worst numbers in terms of hospitalizations and deaths. It's 1,900 per day, dead, dying, killed, including a whole bunch of prominent people recently who refused to get the vaccine. The vaccine deaths, almost 100% of those deaths from COVID recently. We will get to that. We will also get to fiery exchange, and really fiery exchange, on the floor of the House of Representatives over the fact that the government is going to shut down and we're going we have the possibility of really a complete financial catastrophe if America defaults. No, it's not over that. Over the crisis at the border, where the situation now, everyone is acknowledging, is in fact a crisis. And yet the administration seems absolutely paralyzed, refusing to do anything about it. We're going to be speaking to two points of view on immigration and about the administration's complete failure. Henry Olson has written a column. He's going to be joining us, saying that the Democrats' strategy on handling the immigration issue is a gift to Republicans. And speaking of gifts from one party to another, there's also the feud between Mitch McConnell, the leading Republican in the government right now. And yes, he's in the government. He's on Capitol Hill. He's the Senate minority leader officially, but he's the leader of one half of the U.S. Senate. And Mitch McConnell right now, a increasingly bitter feud on both sides with Donald Trump. What is that about? The Maxine Waters accusing the Biden border control, talk about dividing among within a party. She's including the Biden border patrol of being worse than slavery. Why? We will get to that. And also the Gabby Petito case. I've avoided talking about it because honestly, I don't get the deep fascination. But now the media are accused of racism because they give so much attention to this one horrible murder case. And yes, it is a murder case now. They've identified that she was the victim of homicide. And meanwhile, they're looking for the her fiancé. But honest to goodness, is this really she only getting attention because she's white? Or is there some other factor that may play a role in all of the attention she is receiving? I just was mentioning to you that just moments ago, there was a truly bitter exchange on the House floor. And first, you have the indescribably awful disgrace to the United States House of Representatives and the human race, Rashida Tlaib. Again, I don't think I could bring myself to say the Honorable Rashida Tlaib because there's nothing honorable about her. She's a bigot. She is a racist. And she is a chronic, inveterate liar and an ignoramus and a fool at the same time. But Rashida Tlaib was talking about opposition to something that passed the House nearly unanimously, which was helping Israel to fund and to continue to fund the Iron Dome project. The Iron Dome, of course, a technology that is of great benefit to Americans as well, because it shoots down what terrorists send over as weapons of mass destruction. You can't use Iron Dome to attack civilians, never used for that. It's used only to protect civilians and to protect your side, whether it's an American side or American bases or Israeli bases, to protect that side from attacks by Hezbollah or Hamas or any of the other Iran supported terrorist organizations. Here is what Rashida Tlaib had to say to her colleagues on the House floor minutes ago.
Into this supplemental. I will not support an effort to enable and support war crimes, human rights abuses, and violence. We cannot be talking only about Israelis' need for safety at a time when Palestinians are living under a violent apartheid system and are dying from what Human Rights Watch has said are war crimes. We should also be talking about Palestinian need for security from Israeli attacks. We must be consistent in our commitment to human life, period. Everyone deserves to be safe there. The bill claims to be, quote, a replenishment for weapons apartheid Israel used in a crisis it manufactured when it attacked worshippers at one of the most holiest Islamic locations, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, committing, again, numerous war crimes. And yet, a $1 billion in American tax dollars or my colleagues want to give represents, to me, an absurd and unjustifiable 140 times increase to U.S. funding for the Iron Dome. I firmly believe our country must oppose selling weapons to anyone, anywhere, without human rights law compliance. The Israeli government is an apartheid regime. Not my words, the words of Human Rights Watch and Israel's own Human Rights Watch organization, B'Tselem. I urge my colleagues, please stand with me in supporting human rights for all. I yield.
Okay, by the way, one week ago, headline. Terrorists fire one rocket from Gaza, then another, as IDF strikes Hamas targets. Both of the rockets sent from Gaza, which is not ruled by Israel. There is no Israeli presence in Gaza, none at all. There are no Israeli cops. There are no Israeli soldiers. No nothing. No Israelis. No Jews. Not allowed. And what they do have is a lot of terrorists, and they sent off the rockets. Rockets were intercepted, both of the rockets that were sent by the Palestinian terror group Hamas. They were intercepted by Iron Dome. Three were injured trying to run to a bomb shelter, a third successive night of rocket fire amid increase in tensions. This is unreal. There was this, a response from Democratic Representative Ted Deutch of Florida, who abandoned his prepared speech to respond to Tlaib. Listen.
I cannot allow one of my colleagues to stand on the floor of the House of Representatives and label the Jewish Democratic State of Israel an apartheid state. I reject it. To falsely characterize the State of Israel is consistent with those, let's be clear, it's consistent with those who advocate for the dismantling of the one Jewish state in the world. And when there is no place on the map for one Jewish state, that's anti-Semitism. And I reject that.
Okay, this is profoundly important because the whole claim of apartheid... Apartheid meant people didn't get the chance to vote. The only reason Palestinians don't get the chance to vote is because their side, the Palestinian Authority, canceled elections. And they have not had elections in 16 years. There's no Israeli interference with the right to vote. And in fact, Arab citizens of Israel voted in great numbers. And in fact, there is an Arab party that is a part of this government. Under Prime Minister Naftali Bennett. There's more, and more from other members of Congress coming up. We'll also talk about what's going on with the economy right now and the market just rip-roaring booming. That and much more all coming up on The MedVed Show.
Your daily dose of debate. It's the...
The House of Representatives just approved a bill providing $1 billion for the Iron Dome defense system. It's 2 days after the funding was stripped from a short-term government spending bill amid objections from progressive lawmakers. The measure cleared the House in a bipartisan vote of 420 to 9. Eight Democrats, including Rashida Tlaib and no doubt Ilhan Omar, voted no. That's 8 Democrats, and 2 Democrats voted present. That would be Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Hank Johnson of Georgia. Okay, this is an unbelievable thing. Yair Lapid, who is the deputy prime minister of Israel, and by the way, he's somebody who's on the center left in Israeli politics. He was one of the co-founders of the Blue and White Party, which is part of the government, finally succeeded in ousting Bibi Netanyahu. So he's no hard right kind of guy. And he just thanked the Congress of the United States for the overwhelming vote of confidence and support. And he made the point, which is a very, very powerful point, it seems to me, which is that the Iron Dome saves civilian lives, including lives among the 1.8 million Arab citizens of Israel. He tweeted immediately after the vote in Congress, "I am grateful for the overwhelming bipartisan support for Israel and the solid commitment to our security, demonstrated yesterday by the vote on the replenishment of the Iron Dome missile defense system." And Charles Fleischman, who is a Republican from Tennessee, it basically said this about Rashida Tlaib after her attack on Israel, calling Israel an apartheid state. By the way, if anybody wants to try, tell me what aspect of Israeli life is run according to apartheid. None of it, actually. In apartheid, they had separate beaches. They had separate movie theaters, separate restaurants. None of that is true in Israel, in a separation between Palestinian Arabs and Israeli Jews. That's just not there. And it's nonsense, and it's a slander, as Representative Fleischman from Tennessee pointed out. Listen.
Trauma is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, the truth has finally come out on the floor of the House of the United States of America. I heard some of my Democratic colleagues stand with me, with Israel, with our ally, to fight terrorism with a defensive weapon system. And what did we just hear? We heard the Democratic Party speak out. We heard right now from my colleague across the aisle with a shocking statement. She opposes this because they have a vocal minority in the majority party that is anti-Israel, that is anti-Semitic, and as Americans, we can never stand for that. I grew up with Holocaust survivors. I grew up with children of Holocaust survivors. Israel has been attacked and attacked and attacked since its inception. As Americans, I beseech you, I reach out to the majority and I say, condemn what we just heard on the floor. Condemn terrorism. This is a defensive weapon system. Stop playing your procedural games. I hear commit, recommit. It was a motion to recommit. You just saw something on this floor I thought I would never see. Not only as a member of this House, but as an American. Let us stand with Israel. Let's combat anti-Semitism wherever it is in the world, whether it's in the United States, whether it's from terrorism. I am shocked, Mr. Speaker, with what I just heard. I ask the majority to condemn the comments that were just made by their member. And with that, I yield back.
Okay, well, good for him. I don't know yet. We'll find out who the one Republican was who voted on the other side. It might be Representative Massey of Kentucky, who is a contrarian, and no comment on Representative Massey until we find out whether that he was the guy. But again, very encouraging that at least one of the parties is almost completely united, and the other is a little bit less united, but still overwhelmingly united. If you talk about over 200 Democrats voting for the Iron Dome, for protecting civilians from terror attacks by Islamic terrorists. And that's still a representation of solidarity. And frankly, this is a point that Jeremy Steiner, Pride of Hillsdale College, made. Somebody ought to ask Joe Biden or his press spokesman, Jen Psaki, to take a stand on this. How do they feel about Israel being characterized as an apartheid state? And basically, Rashida Tlaib saying that America should do nothing to help save Jewish lives, because Rashida Tlaib doesn't appreciate the state of Israel. The representative, it was Thomas Massey of Kentucky. That's pretty good that I figured that out. What a jerk. I mean, he has been, and the reason I knew it was him is because he's a follower of one of the leading anti-Zionist and I believe anti-Semitic voices in America today, which is not Rand Paul, the senator from Kentucky, but Ron Paul, the crazy old man, who, by the way, takes huge money from Vladimir Putin. It's not a secret. His current funding operation is largely Russian in origin. And he wrote about dangers to the United States from A to Z, and Z, in his idea of a danger to the United States, was Zionism. And he suggests that he has basically hated the whole idea of Israel since he heard a presentation in 1951 when he was a kid. It's an amazing situation. And we're talking about the Biden approval rating. The Biden approval rating does not indicate that his administration has collapsed, but it is certainly foundering. It is certainly struggling. Gallup, Biden's rating down 6 points since August, 13 points since June. Independence approval of Biden is down to 37%, down from 55% in June. And the latest drop in Joe Biden's approval score is the second significant decline since June. Biden's honeymoon ratings near 55%, first faltered in July, falling to 50%. So what's behind all of that? We'll talk about that and more with Henry Olson, a columnist on education, populism, and American conservative thought. Coming up. On the Michael Medved Show, it's a pleasure to welcome back Henry Olson, who is a columnist for the Washington Post. He's a senior fellow at the Outstanding Ethics and Public Policy Center. He has written, well, kind of about everything that's in the news right now. But I wanted to have the opportunity to speak to him about the Canadian election. I know. Canada's not noted for its thrilling politics, but this election could have real lessons for Republicans and Democrats in the upcoming elections here in 2022 and certainly in 2024. Henry, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Michael.
Okay, first of all, you wrote positively about the leader of the Conservative Party, the Tories in Canada, who came close but didn't quite win enough. He prevented Justin Trudeau from winning a majority government. But do you still feel as positively about Aaron O'Connor and the way he was leading the Conservatives in Canada as you feel about as you felt about him before the election returns were counted?
Well, yeah, I think that returns were extremely disappointing. I thought that you would see two things that didn't happen. One, I thought you would see a stronger shift to the Tories in blue-collar areas. And second, I thought you would see people who were voting for the conservative populist party that had no chance, the People's Party, come back home. And you didn't see either. And I think that ultimately comes back to Mr. O'Toole, that he didn't make the points that he needed to make. And I think that calls his future leadership into question.
Uh-huh. What about Prime Minister Trudeau? You've also written about some of his mistakes. What do you think was he had clearly called this election with the expectation that he would win a majority government, not have to rely on the NDP, not have to rely on the far left, but he does now. What did he get wrong about his campaign?
Well, I think what he got wrong about his campaign was how much Canadians wanted to reward him. That he went into the campaign upside down in public opinion polls, as we say, which is, say, more people disapproving of his job performance than approving of it. And O'Toole, for the fact that he didn't do what I had hoped and thought he would do, he did do well enough to give Canadians who were unhappy with Trudeau, but not on the far left, enough of an alternative to keep Trudeau from getting a majority. So I think Trudeau might be, you look and you say, where does he go from here? I don't know there are many Canadians who have won four elections in a row. That fourth election is often very difficult. So, this might be the last time Justin Trudeau sits in the prime minister's chair.
But he's not obligated to call another election for, what does he have, another 4 years?
Yes, he has another 4 years, and who knows what's going to happen then. And he could very well be one of those very few Canadian PMs to win a fourth consecutive term, but Stephen Harper failed at that. I'm not even sure his dad won four elections in a row, and his dad was the most successful Liberal prime minister since World War II. So it's a very difficult task. He had his shot to get a secure majority, and typically governments don't go up in their fourth election, they go down.
Okay, which brings us to the, it's bad news, bad news, bad news, it looks like, for Joe Biden. The new Gallup poll is out today with his approval rating hitting a new low of 43%. And again, Biden's defenders will bring up, well, Trump was even lower. But Trump was kind of a unicorn because he never had a honeymoon at all. It wasn't that he went down so dramatically in his first 6 months as president. Biden did and has. What's Joe Biden's biggest problem right now?
Joe Biden's biggest problem is he's losing independence. That if you take a look underneath the aggregate figure, he has fallen from a job approval rating in the mid-50s to one in the mid-40s in the Real Clear Politics average, and almost all of that change has come from independents. He used to be approved by them. He is now disapproved by them by nearly 20 points on average. And I think the reason he's losing independence has little to do with Afghanistan. It's rather been a steady drop since April. The more he moves left, the more independents don't like him, but yet his party demands that he move further to the left. I think that's an insoluble problem, and I think it's going to take a long time for Biden to figure out how to even get back closer to 50%.
Okay, it seems to me that if you look at Joe Biden's most conspicuous failures, number one is not immigration, that's number two, which is a huge conspicuous failure. But number one has to be COVID-19, which impacts the way everybody lives. Do you think he may have bit off more than he could chew with pushing these national vaccine mandates?
I think the polls suggest people like them, but I think it's a mile wide and an inch deep. Certainly a lot of the poll ratings on things like that come from his own party. The question about independence, again, they're more split on it, and I suspect the people who really don't like it are stronger in their opinions about it than the people who really do. And one thing to remember is that according to the CDC, 67% of people 18 and older already have one dose. of the vaccine. That's the voting pool. And when you think about who is likely to vote, older people, well over 80% already have the vaccine. The mandates aren't going to solve his political problem because most of the people who are going to vote are already vaccinated. His problem has been an unwillingness to tackle the real economic challenges and actually be willing to move on from COVID. He's still stuck in the pandemic mindset when, in fact, for most people in the United States, the worst is over, and he should be trying to communicate that message rather than continue to sell us on battling a problem that most people have already solved.
You say this even with 1,900 Americans a day in the last week, 1,900 a day dying of COVID?
I think that's a terrible statistic. It is awful. And it is largely people who are making, who are reaping the consequences of bad choices that they made. That almost all of the people who are dying and are going to hospitals are unvaccinated. And I think that what Biden should be doing is making a stronger, more persuasive pitch for people to help themselves rather than implying the heavy and arguably constitutional, as it applies to most people in the private sector, mandates. I think the more people have to, you know, if you're unvaccinated and you are faced between a job and doing something that you really, really don't want to do, that's going to harden your opinion. And there's already some polls showing that people within the Democratic coalition who are unvaccinated really don't like Joe Biden's mandates.
But isn't it just an incredibly awful thing for the country for something like getting a vaccine against a deadly epidemic that has become politicized?
And it's, you know, something that the flip side, you know, remember when Donald Trump was in the White House, you had a lot of Democrats saying, we're not sure if we trust this vaccine, including the current vice president. The same vaccine comes out on Joe Biden's watch and suddenly becomes literally mandatory. That's their politicization of it. This politicization of fighting the pandemic has happened virtually nowhere else in the world, and it is largely, I believe, a result of the rabid Trump hatred on the left that fueled the politicization here and created an equal and opposite reaction. So now you have people arguing about politics through public health when they really should be focusing on public health.
Just to paraphrase John F. Kennedy, we can do better. We can and must do better. Henry Olson, always appreciate your perspective and your wisdom. We will be right back on the MedVet Show. On the Michael Medved Show, a report from Associated Press, which is actually so shocking, and it's basically just the latest toll from the COVID-19. Do you remember, honestly, it wasn't even that long ago. If you go back and you look at what was going on in early spring, and the vaccines were rolling out, and we do have a majority of Americans now who have gotten at least one dose of vaccinations, pretty big majority. A slight majority have gotten both doses. But COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. have climbed to an average of more than 1,900 a day for the first time since early March. With experts saying the coronavirus is preying largely on a distinct group, 71 million unvaccinated U.S. residents. The increasingly lethal turn has filled hospitals, complicated the start of the school year, delayed the return to offices, and demoralized healthcare workers. Dana Hubbard, who is a pediatrician in the Kansas City, Missouri area, said it is devastating. because she's cared for babies delivered prematurely by cesarean section in a last-ditch effort to save their mothers, some of whom died. For health workers, the deaths combined with misinformation and disbelief about the coronavirus have been heart-wrenching and soul-crushing. 22 people died in 1 week at Cox Health Hospitals in the Springfield-Branson area in Missouri, a level almost as high as that of all of Chicago, West Virginia. Of all of Chicago, and West Virginia has had more deaths in the first 3 weeks of September, 340, than in the previous 3 months combined. Georgia is averaging 125 dead a day, more than California or other states with a greater population. I've got to tell you, a guy has got to wonder if we are ever going to see the end of it or not, said Colin Follis, who is the coroner in Missouri's Madison County and works at a funeral home. This goes on, and it is not a joke. It is not a fraud. And the fact that the United States should be the only nation on earth, really, with a significant number of people who are resisting vaccines, other countries are begging for vaccines. And we just got this. I find this extremely scary because I do care about the future of the Republican Party. This came through the email. It came to Jeremy Steiner, Pride of Hillsdale College. The heading was, "Support our lawsuit against Joe's vaccine mandate. Help fund our efforts against Joe's unconstitutional vaccine mandate. We plan to launch a major lawsuit in response to Biden's fascist vaccine mandate, and our records indicate you have not helped fund our efforts yet. Legal efforts like this are massive undertakings and require support from millions of patriots to succeed. If we fall short, the government will have the power to force you to get the vaccine. Please contribute any amount by 11:59 tonight to support our lawsuit against Joe Biden's horrible vaccine mandate." The question here would be, this was sent out by the Republican National Committee. And unless it's somebody using a fake address to make Republicans look bad, but I checked the address and went back to it. And yeah, it's the... paid for by a Republican National Committee, not authorized by any candidate, et cetera, et cetera. The difficulty here is, okay, if you're trying to mobilize people to stop a vaccine mandate, what's your plan? Because right now things are not going well in terms of COVID. And no, ivermectin, people can go ahead and try it. It's not illegal, but it's not going to be the answer to 1,900 deaths a day. What is going to be the answer, and has been the answer for state after state after state and for survey after survey after survey, is getting people vaccinated and protected. And yes, now being authorized in Pfizer, at least, and maybe soon with Moderna, and maybe Johnson & Johnson as well, getting booster shots. And the one thing that has come out in all of the research is that even for the breakthrough cases, the lethality of the virus, its ability to actually kill you or to send you into the hospital, is greatly reduced if you've been vaccinated. If you've been vaccinated and you get COVID again, the chances are excellent that you will survive. If you have not been vaccinated, well, good luck. The chances that you will be seriously ill or dead are greatly increased. I don't understand why any political party that actually looks at the polling, that looks at, by the way, the elections in California, it clearly worked for Gavin Newsom that he was the pro-vaccine candidate. And Larry Elder made the mistake of identifying with an immediate end to the vaccine mandates that have been imposed statewide. And by the way, it's a much more clear constitutional ability to put forward a mandate if you do it on a statewide basis rather than a federal basis, because it should be a statewide issue. The idea of everything we're going through right now continuing, how much longer? There's a very real risk you'll end up in the hospital or even in the obituary pages, says Dr. Bruce Vanderhoff, chief medical officer of in Ohio, but William Moss of Johns Hopkins makes the point as well. Don't become a statistic when there's a simple, safe, and effective alternative to go out today and get vaccinated. William Moss of Johns Hopkins Medical Center says that many low vaccination communities also have high rates of conditions like obesity and diabetes, along with a more contentious Delta variant, that has proven lethal. I think this is a real failure of society and our most egregious sin to be at this stage where we have hospitals overwhelmed, ICUs overwhelmed, and hitting this mark in terms of deaths per day, so said Dr. Moss of Johns Hopkins University. Look, this is not something that Americans can't get together and do something about. And I understand that for a lot of people, the idea of a vaccine mandate of the government, federal government, telling you what to do in terms of health decisions rubs you the wrong way. Okay, so figure out another way that we can actually move forward against this virus. And yeah, I'm sure we will have some kind of virus and COVID infections, but it doesn't need to be a pandemic. It certainly doesn't need to be 1,900 a day. Meanwhile, we have even more than 1,900 a day, and when it comes to people crossing our border illegally and increasingly to a remarkable extent, they are now people who are not from Latin America, not from Mexico, not from Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador. They're from all over the world. Why is this happening? What do we do about it? Could this be the issue that definitively sinks Joe Biden's presidency? I believe that if he does nothing about it, if he continues to basically try to shunt this issue aside, oh yeah, Kamala Harris is taking care of it, that hasn't been a good maneuver on his side. We will talk about that and what next with the crisis on the southern border. We'll speak about it with Ruben Navarrete, who has lived and studied and thought about this problem and also thought about some positive things that could be done by a capable government. We will talk about that and much more coming up in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.